Welcome to this week's Books and Culture podcast with John Wilson, who's the editor of Books and Culture, and I'm Stan Guthrie. John, this week we're going to be discussing a new project by David Brooks, The Best American Essays.
That's right, Stan. The very popular series continues, and as usual, Robert Atwan is the series editor, and each year they have a different person who selects the essays for that year. And this year it's the New York Times columnist David Brooks.
Well, tell us, what's in this volume?
Well, I want to read you something that came with the publicity for the book. It's from a starred review in Publishers Weekly. And it says, "A creature from an alternative universe arriving in the United States in 2012. Notice it's not enough anymore to say somebody from Mars or, you know, from another galaxy. They've got to come from an alternative universe. So not quite sure how they get here. But anyway, wanting to understand what is on the American mind, should rush to the nearest bookstore and buy a copy of this distinguished anthology." So wanting to understand what is on the American mind. I would have to say that my reaction to the book was very different from that. I think that this tells you what is on the mind of David Brooks, who's an extremely intelligent man who is at the center of things in a way, and as a columnist for the New York Times. I think it tells you what he and people who are in his circles are thinking about.
The Upper West Side.
I was struck as I was reading the book by the way in which the vast majority of the essays seemed remote from most of the things that I'm interested in and the things that an awful lot of the people I know. Now, that's not true of all of them. It's not a critique of the writing or of the editor. There's not a single essay in the book that is poor or even mediocre in the writing. You know, the writing is expert.
What do you think is missing?
Well, one thing that's missing totally almost is God. And thinking about anything, whatever the subject might be, thinking about it from a faith perspective. This person from an alternative universe who read this book wouldn't even know that there were people who believed in something called God, whatever form that might take, whatever religious tradition they were in. It's almost, not 100%, but it's almost entirely a secular world that's presented here. There's no particular belligerence about that. Now, you have to remember that I'm reading this, first of all, as someone who loves reading, and you'll be amused by the very beginning of David Brooks' introduction. He says, "When I was an undergrad at the University of Chicago, I attended classes with a moderate degree of diligence, but my most profitable hours came in the evenings when I'd put off doing my homework by wandering around the stacks of the Regenstein Library. I'd invariably make my way over to the section where the old periodicals were kept." And so I've told you the story more than once, and I mentioned it just on one of our very recent podcasts of how that was one of the most formative experiences of my life, was doing exactly what he describes. And so I felt such a feeling of kinship as I read, going on talking about reading old issues of the New Republic and American Mercury and so on. I mean, I did exactly the same thing. And yet, oddly enough, in reading the essays again and again, I had this sense of distance I'm talking about. Now, there were two essays in the book where I did not experience that. The one that, for me, was overwhelmingly the most powerful is by a former head of a university named David Lawless. And it's called My Father, My Husband. And interestingly enough, it was published in Prism. It's in a narrative form. It starts out, "He is preparing the evening meal, fried pork chops, rice, carrots from the garden, and a salad, a couple of rolls from the supermarket. Is my father coming for dinner?" She asks. "No." "Why not?" "Because your father died 46 years ago." "He has given this answer several times a day for the past 2 or 3 years," and so on. And so it goes on. It's almost all in dialogue form. And you learn in the little bio at the end that you infer that the person being described is his wife of more than 50 years who died a couple of years ago. The reason it was so powerful to me, and David Brooks rightly says in his introduction that he encountered tons of essays dealing with this matter because it's become one of the very common experiences of our time. And it's hard to write about. It's a hard thing to write about. For one thing, you fall into cliches. It's like Miłosz said about writing about the concentration camps. You know, I mean, there's a terrible reality there. But one of the hardest things is that you find yourself mired in cliches. And Christian writing about it often suffers from another problem, which is it tries to be too triumphalist. This is a piece that resonated very powerfully with my own experience with my mom in a way that most writing about this subject that I've seen doesn't. In fact, a lot of what I've read, I tend not to even read things about the experience of dementia because I get angry, you know. Yeah. The other piece that I really admired was by a writer who has been published in Books and Culture, and a writer I've mentioned to you, we talked recently about his new book, Privacy, Garrett Kaiser. And he talks about, in the fall of 2010, after a 14-year hiatus from the classroom and at the unpropitious age of 57, I began a one-year job filling in for a teacher on leave from the same rural high school in Orleans, Vermont, that I'd entered as a rookie 30 years before. And he talks about that experience. He talks, among other things, about just what a tough job it is, how draining it is. And I give you one line that I think you'll like. He says, like a war-wounded veteran unable to give his full trust to anyone who has never experienced the traumas of combat, I can find it hard to respect the opinions of anyone who has never taught school. And he goes on, Ludwig Wittgenstein, of modern philosophers, perhaps the most sainted, served time as a school teacher. I'm not surprised. I'm also not surprised that he resigned his position after hitting an 11-year-old boy in the head. You know, I can imagine someone listening to this podcast and saying, wow, so negative, you know. And also I can imagine someone saying, well, John lots of times says, you know, he reads because he wants to see the world through other eyes. And so just because the people in this book are mostly talking about things that are not of such pressing interest to him, or they're talking about him in a way that's not his cup of tea, shouldn't he love? And, you know, I think that's in some ways a fair criticism, and it points out a certain tension at the heart of reading, which is that, yes, it's absolutely true that one of the reasons that I read, as C.S. Lewis said, is to see through other eyes. And then it's also true that reading can be like sitting next to a really irritating person on the plane, you know, and they start talking, and after four or five sentences, you realize that you really don't want to have any conversation with them, and you hope that they'll just shut up. And entering into the mental world of someone who, for whatever reason, it may partly be ideological, it may be not that at all, it may be that they're just writing about something that's totally not of interest to you and you can't enter into it, or it may be that they're talking in a certain slick way, a kind of packaged way that gets under your skin. But whatever it is, reading becomes a chore then, like the flight is to be endured with this person. I would say to readers, check it out yourself and see what you think, but it is interesting, particularly from the standpoint of people of faith, it is interesting to reflect on what's here and what isn't.